So, welcome everybody to another episode of Europe's B2B SaaS sales podcast. My name is Patrick, and I'm incredibly happy to welcome Joachim Süss today. Hi, Joachim. Nice to have you here.
Hey, Patrick, thanks for having me and thanks for pronouncing my last name right. Like, that's the first time that's ever
Well, you helped me a little bit in advance. Thanks as well. No, it's a pleasure to have you here, Joachim. For those who don't know Joachim, so the second name, if you want to search for him afterwards on LinkedIn, it's Suszt. And Joachim is the VP of Global Revenue at ContractBook. ContractBook, quite one of these sales tech success stories, I think, grew to more than there between 160, 170 people at the moment. And Joachim, yeah, is leading this the global revenue team there out of New York, even though 70% of his team are actually in Europe, because the company is a Danish company started out of Copenhagen. So I'm incredibly excited to have this discussion with you, Joachim, today. Let's dive right in. We usually start with the two tactical tips. So I hand over to you, and let's get it
Sure.
started.
So as I was thinking and preparing, I think my two biggest tactical tips that I could give anybody, one is that you should constantly remind yourself of the fact that nobody gives a fuck, if I can say that on the podcast, nobody gives a fuck about you or your product. People only care about themselves and their issues. And I think that that's the biggest mistake that I see salespeople and sales teams make. They're pitching the product, they're pitching themselves, they're pitching what it does. Nobody cares. People care about themselves, people care about the issues that they're facing. And I think that every single time you pick up the phone or you write an email, think about the other side. Empathy is the most important thing. So that's tactical tip number one. The second one is that the most counterintuitive thing about sales is that you should listen a lot more than you talk. And I think that the ability to live in silence, the ability to listen, the ability to be quiet is actually one of the biggest changes that I made as a salesperson, and one of the things that made the most impact on the way that I kind of interacted with the world around me, and the results were great.
Do you remember I mean, these are amazing. Do you remember actually how you were able to make that transition from talking a lot to starting to listen? Because I agree with you, and I see we both, have our sales calls recorded and probably can listen in from time to time. Or I still do a lot of mock-up calls also with my team, or the team leads, and it's really like this. They listening is tough. They don't really listen what I say and don't ask a question based on what I say, but based maybe on a list or no question at all anymore and dive in, right? I think that's so. I guess you experienced the same still as well.
I definitely did, and I think that companies like Unique and the technology which is being built around this world, I think was actually what unlocked it for me. Because when you hear yourself and when you have an opportunity to replay a call, and you suddenly on the second time around you notice how many things you missed because you were so eager to say whatever it is that you wanted to say. You were so excited. I was so excited about some feature that I couldn't wait to tell the world about. When I listened back to the call, I suddenly noticed how inappropriate that was, right? The prospect was telling me about something that I had something way more relevant to say and respond and talk about. But because I wasn't listening, right? There's a very big difference between not talking, but waiting to say what you want to say and listening. Listening is hard, and it's counterintuitive to salespeople because who goes into sales, right? People that go into sales are people which are verbal, they are people that and are articulate. So it's a funny situation where the people that are drawn into sales are I used to think that being a good salesperson was about being charming and witty and being able to control the room and do all these things. And I do believe that there's a part of that, right? I haven't changed my mind, but I think that it's even more important to have the ability to listen, to really comprehend what the other side is saying, like literally process it, and then to be able to respond. And I think that call recording technologies, put it in your face, right? If up till then, you know, there was this black box and you didn't know, like, you know, your salespeople classically, when they win a deal, it's because they're great. When they lose a deal, it's because the product's bad, right? But, and all of a sudden, call recording technology has allowed us all to face the truth in a sense. And I think that coaching others, being coached yourself, like, I'm a big fan of sending my own calls, even today, to colleagues and saying, like, hey, can you give me feedback? And I think that when somebody says, hey, you missed that, hey, you missed that, hey, they said this and you were completely on another rail, that's when you notice how important it is. And I think that, like, those two things that I said, my two tactical tips, they're both the same thing. It's, I think that, like, I ask salespeople, and sorry for this long rant, which is completely against what I'm telling you that people should do in the world, but I think that, like, the most important skill for a successful salesperson is empathy.
Yeah. Good one. Do you test for empathy? Now, if you hire salespeople, you have, I guess it's quite important to kind of see whether people are empathetic. How do you test for that? Or how do you find out whether people are? It's just a gut feeling based on your experience, or how can people who listen kind of understand how to do this?
I think that you can see empathy through questions that people ask. I think that in an interview, you can very often feel when people are very scripted and, you know, they have this list of questions which they have prepared ahead of time. And on the one hand, kudos for preparing. But on the other hand, if you're not listening to what I'm saying and you're not kind of asking me questions which are following up, building on the conversation that's happening, to me, that's a lack of empathy. Because I think empathy, it's not about feeling sorry for the other person. Empathy is about being able to see the world through another's eyes, right? And I think that, one, you know, you can ask very tactically also questions like, tell me about a deal that you lost. And then they tell you a story. And then I'll ask, for example, can you tell me why you think you lost it from their perspective? Because very often they'll say, well, oh, we did this, we did this, we didn't send them this, we didn't send them that. And I'm trying to understand, can you tell a story from another angle? Can you understand something from somebody else's perspective? Because I think that in sales, like, that's a cheat code. Like, being able to get into to really understand the other party, understand what's important, understand what they're trying to solve, understand what are really hard red lines. And I've got, you know, a lot of examples of areas in which people didn't read the map correctly, right? They assumed the other party cared about one thing and not another. And, like, they weren't able to ask the right questions. They weren't able to listen to the answers. And to me, that's actually the most crucial thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I think I agree, definitely. That is one of the most important aspects. And one of the things that is hardest to train and teach. Is there any way, Joachim, that you do regularly, or that your team leads or your team does, to actually change this, really, you know, from talking and pitching to really change this to listening? Or do you only hire people who are already only listening? I guess that's not the case, right? Or that's difficult.
It's not the case. I mean, I think that you know, when you hire people, I think it's 50% success on the best of days, right? I think that ultimately, it's very difficult. I think that, you know, you can try and do two things. I think one of them is repeat yourself and explain it again and again and again, because I think that more than anything, it's a mindset change, right? It's this understanding. And I think that it's very ingrained, especially in salespeople early in their careers, that it's about me pitching, right? There's this idea of pitch me, like, tell me what, you know, give me your 30-second pitch, give me your elevator pitch. And I think that popular culture has created this stereotype, which I think that, you know, before I worked in sales, I'm a lawyer by training, right? I always thought, like, I thought about salespeople. I thought about, like, Better Call Saul. I thought about, like, Al Bundy from Married with Children, if anybody's ever watched that show. But it's like the slimy snake oil salesperson, which is trying to get one under you. But when you really work in this world, you understand that the people that are the most successful are the ones that listen. And I think that if you keep repeating that to people, that changes. And secondly, helping people understand, what does good look like? What does a good discovery call look like? And again, not that I'm here to pitch unique, but I think that, you know, the ability to say, like, hey, this is what good looks like. Look at what they did there, right? Look at how the salesperson here asked an open-ended question. Look at how they listened to the answer and followed up. I think, in my experience at least, I believe showing people what good looks like is the most effective way of getting them to do it themselves, more than anything else.
Yeah. Do you evaluate that at the moment internally as well? You know, whether some concrete variables like speaking time is something, whether that has an impact on the numbers, really. Is that something you can?
Not really. You know, it's something that I wish I could say that we track meticulously and that I've drawn a lot of insights from. I think that we're not yet there. You know, we're still an early stage company, and I think that that's the next level, right? You want to get to a repeatable process, and once you have that repeatable process, you want to start going for those optimizations and start understanding, yeah, like, does talk time impact, how many questions should you ask, you know, yeah. For example, for me, I know that one of my biggest weaknesses is that I respond very quickly, right? There's this idea of like, how long do you pause? I'm terrible at that. Like, I'm very bad at that. I'm probably the lowest in the team, right? Somebody asks that question, I'm already like, I haven't given it a second. I'm like, yeah, I get it, I know what you wanted to say. It's also very Israeli of me, but you know, like, I always want to get out there, and I'm sure that it's not the right thing. And I think that, you know, the world of you know, revenue intelligence, call intelligence, it's only the early innings. Like, this is day one of this. I think that the ability to help train people on a personal level, right, be able to say like, hey Patrick, you know, your issue is that you don't ask enough questions, you have your issues that you talk too fast and you don't let anybody, you know, cut you off, whatever it is. Like, I think that there's a huge world which can help people improve.
Yeah, true. Are you using any methodologies, sales methodologies at the moment, like Medic or Spiced or Spin or all these kind of acronyms?
I don't know if this is a popular opinion. I didn't come from a traditional sales background, right? I've never been through formal sales training in my life. I read all the books. Like, I read Spin Selling, I read all of the Winning by Design books, I've read it all. And I think that, you know, I think that all of these sales processes and approaches, they have a flaw in them, which is that the way that they're applied is, it's difficult to take a methodology and say, I'm gonna do Medic, because Medic is okay, but like, every organization, every sales organization, every sales process needs something different. And I think that trying to make one size fits all is wrong, right? So I've taken some elements out of Spin Selling, which I've really, really liked. I've taken things out of the Challenger Sale, which I liked. I've taken things out of Medic. I think that the only methodology which to this day I follow very meticulously is BANT. Like, that's the only thing where I'm like, there needs to be a budget. There needs to be clear line of sight to the authority. You need to identify a need, and there needs to be timing. Like, the most simple qualification, but that's the only one where I'm like, copy paste, do this everywhere, because I think that that's the minimum. But I just believe that, you know, you need to take the best out of all of these methodologies and build the thing that's right for you. I came, you know, prior to Contract Book, where here we're doing an average of 18 days of sales cycle. I came from an organization where we did, you know, 180 day sales cycles. So to say that you can use Medic in both of them, maybe, but for one, it might be overkill, and for the other one, it might not be enough, right? So to me, choosing the methodology is more about picking and choosing the best elements of each.
Yeah, okay. But you are applying BANT internally, or do you just tell people, hey, you have to have that in mind? Don't ask the question at the first, you know, at the cold outreach call. I mean, I can say this for sure. We are customers of Contract Book at Unique.
Yeah.
Well done. And the guy who did the cold call, he was good. I remember, and he didn't bant me, by the way. First thing, yeah, meaning a cold call, we both know that you can't bant people, otherwise you're gone. And then, but that's something to keep in mind, just as in the back of the head. But I also thought bant is... I always say BANT is something you apply when you have the issue of you need to filter out leads. You know, a lot of opportunities are coming in. You need to filter out for those. You can close the best now, right? Our outreach is a lot outbound, so all cold called, and the topic is not. I mean, yes, there are quite a few companies like yours already kind of thought of, hey, yes, we need to record calls and you already do it. But there are also many have never heard of anything like this, so it's quite new, and then it's difficult to apply. As you said, it's about the where you are at with the company, what product, how is the market, is it new market, is it an existing market, is it competitive, and so on. I think that makes sense.
Absolutely, I completely agree, and I think that to me, yes, when you're doing outbound, you can't do bound. And also when you're creating a relatively new category, right? And I think that we both actually face that, right? Both companies, because, you know, when people talk about contracts or online contracts, unfortunately, you know, up till now, people think about contract signature and they think about DocuSign, right? Like that's who's in the room, right? That's the elephant in the room, and that's cool. There are not a ton of companies out there which are saying, I need better contract automation. And that goes back to this idea of like, nobody cares about contract automation, but people care about make sure you're using the right template, because if you've ever lost a deal because you signed a contract on the wrong paper, and I have, I had a real deal which I signed with a Fortune 100 company in the US, and I had signed it on the wrong version of our contract. So I had to go back and send them a new version. I had to tell them, sorry, the old contract is void. Here is a new version. And they ended up not signing because the person left. This is true story, hand on heart. So like contract disasters, I have never met a sales leader which has not told me at least one horror story about contracts. Something changed and we didn't know. We missed an automatic renewal. Somebody used the wrong template. They didn't use redlining. There's a ton of bad things that can happen. And I think that, you know, in the same way that call intelligence or revenue intelligence today, it's about identifying the use cases. And I think it's about identifying what are the issues that we solve, what do we help. And I can tell you about, you know, Gong, and I apologize to bring them up, but 5 years ago or 4 years ago, I bought Gong in my previous company, and we were in a sales cycle with them. And I told them, guys, what am I meant to do with this? Like, because at the time, my boss kept saying, just record the calls on Zoom and listen to them afterwards. What's the big deal, right? And I told them, this is what I'm getting told. Can you help me sell this internally? And they didn't know what to say. Now, I think it's evolved and changed, and you know, definitely you guys are unique and know what to say, and things have changed and evolved a lot, which is fantastic. But I think that, you know, understanding what it is that you're going to impact inside the business and what you're going to change in behavior is important, because nobody cares about contract automation. People care about what contract automation can do for them. And it's the same thing to me with Unique or with anybody else. It's not about, nobody cares about call recording. People care about better coaching, getting better at selling, being able to understand where things are, having a real memory. Like, and I think that what's interesting about technologies like yours is that it's a very much a one-way door. I've never, ever heard of a company that started recording their calls and stopped.
No, yeah, I haven't heard of that either. That's true.
It's a one-way door, right? This is not a nice, I think that the category that you guys are in is fascinating, because it's one of those that has become from a nice to have to a must have. I will never run a company or an organization of any type that does not have call recording. And I think that the opportunity is bigger. I think that, you know, it should be all customer success calls. I think that every single external facing meeting in a company should be recorded. This is a huge organizational memory, and not to mention the what could be potentially done with the data.
Yeah, true. That's the same thing I thought when I started here. After 2 months, I was also like, I'm never going to build a sales team again without this, even though just for a simple thing of looking at calls and helping them improve with the coachings, even just with this. And to come back to contract book as well, I mean, the case I had, so the guy approached me and I told the cold calling guy, I have one thing that at the moment interests me, and I had just one thing. We were in exactly what you said, DocuSign user. We were only thinking of DocuSign, and we always had to, we were in Salesforce, we have Salesforce, so we had to download the PDF, upload to DocuSign, download the sign again, upload to Salesforce. That was a simple thing, but I was like, it's so annoying also for customer success to not have this, that they have to you know, they have to go to the salespeople and say, hey guys, can you upload these layers? These, I don't have access to your DocuSign, and DocuSign is extremely expensive. That's the second thing. So we only had access as an executive team and my team leads, and the hell annoying. I mean, I want salespeople to have their own proposals and contracts out. Maybe then these things happen as you describe them as well, that they send out the wrong templates, and but that problem is solved. But I was like, these are the two problems that if you can solve those, we are in. And these are very concrete things that you can even say, you know, it takes me half an hour a week to set up contracts for my team, and it also takes me half an hour a week to download and upload and download and upload and all that. So pretty clear cases, actually. So I agree, it's very much the use case. This can be different for quite a few, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I want to give a shout out to Christian from the team who did the cold call to you, and then to Frank that ran the deal there. But I think that, you know, they're two really good examples of people which have taken to heart this idea. And, you know, they did this before I even came onto the stage, but this idea of, you know, focusing on the other side, understanding their problems. And I think that, you know, salespeople, we have this weird trait, which is like, you can come to me and tell me like, these are my problems. Then I'll go, cool, those are really great problems. Let me tell you about this great technology that we have, right? But you told me what you need. Let's talk about that. And I think that, like, companies, salespeople that do that, if you really listen, people tell you what they want. People will tell you what they need. So it seems to me, it's one of those things which is incredibly clear to me. And I think that it's something which good sales leaders know. I think that it's more difficult sometimes for the executive, like for the CEO at a company, especially if they're the founders and the entrepreneurs behind it. They love that product, it's their child, and I get it, and I, you know, great. But they want to talk about their baby, right? I want to talk about my kids. If you give me a second, I'll tell you all about my 6-year-old, my 3-year-old. And it's the same way for a founder, right? I think they want to talk about their baby. But I think that our role as sales leaders, as commercial people in these organizations, is to say, guys, companies are here to create value for others. Otherwise, we don't have a reason to exist. And we create value for others by making them more efficient, by solving their problems, by doing whatever it is. It's never about us. And I think that, like, that is my theme. I think that if you ask anybody on my team, they'll tell you that that's my cat. Like, every single meeting I have with the team, I end with, nobody gives a fuck about us or our product. Everybody cares about themselves and their problems. Every single time.
Love it. It's so much exactly how I do things, and exactly how our CEO is selling, you know, goes out and talks a lot about the product. And I understand. And that's the thing. And I think we are a bit in between, you know, we have to make sure that the salespeople don't do the same as they, and they really, they follow a different methodology. But I also, what I experience, that salespeople, you know, sometimes you have people who come into these calls and say, hey, just show me the product. That also happens, right? You probably have that as well. And how do you, you know, turn this around when somebody comes in and says, hey, can you show me the product? I don't wanna answer question. That happens as well. I think you're right. 80% of the people like to talk and do, and it's very easy. When you ask good follow-up questions, when you set up the call, the discovery call, really well at the beginning, manage the expectations, tell them exactly why you ask questions first, and then they need then you talk about the product. If you do that properly, you manage with even more than 80%, I guess. But I guess that's also experience you have based on.
Absolutely, and I think that, you know, it's not to say that, and you're right, but you're saying 80%, right? And in Pareto, that's good. 20% of people, a lot of people in the world are assholes. Like, that's just how it is, right? And especially, you know, when you're a vendor and you show up for a sales call, they feel so great about themselves and they take it as an opportunity to punch someone, like punch down someone. And what, when someone says, can you just show me the product? I say, hey man, super happy to completely show you the product. The reason that I'm asking these questions is because I want to show you something that's relevant to you. Otherwise, I'm just going to guess. And if I guess, like, it might be good, it might be bad. If you'd like me to, sure, I could just show you a generic demo, but I think that it would probably be good if we could just talk about this for 5-10 minutes. Then usually you get another 80% to say, okay, right? And then there's just show me the product, just show me the product, just show me the product. Cool, I'll show you the product. Like, I'm not, you know, as I've gotten older, I'm not religious about methodology. I'm not religious about anything. If somebody, all they want to do is see the product, cool. But you know, I'll ask you, Patrick, how many of the people that say, just show me the product, and you just show them the product, what would you guess is the percentage of them that end up buying?
Yeah, exactly.
So, pretty low, man. So I think that, you know, in sales, you know, the common saying is that the second best answer after yes is a quick no. And I think that for me, that's okay. Like if somebody doesn't want to play ball, and somebody's just saying, just show me the demo, is also probably, you know, in a sales cycle where there's somebody else and they just want to see what else is out there. And so I think it's also being able to answer those. I think, you know, human beings are wired to not have uncomfortable conversations. And you and I were talking before about the No Rules book, the Netflix book. There's another book, Patty McCord, the woman that ran HR there. I think it's her book, which she writes about the HR culture at Netflix. And I think that having uncomfortable conversations, being able to ask uncomfortable questions, like the best salespeople know how to do that, and they know how to do that in a nice way. But, you know, being able to say like, hey, you know, are you considering somebody else? Like, is there another company that's in the running? And I think sometimes it disarms the other side because they're not used to people asking stuff like that, right? They're not used to people being very direct in a respectful, polite, nice way. Like, you don't have to be aggressive, but you can be you can be forward. And I believe, you know, in my opinion, it's like, is there anything that's going to prevent you from going with us? Do you have any concerns about anything that you haven't seen today? Like, these are important parts of a sales process. And I think that for, you know, pride and ego gets in the way for a lot of people, and they don't want to hear something bad. And we prefer to live with the Schrodinger's cat of deals where you don't know if it's dead or alive, and you chase them, these ghost deals for the rest of your life. And who hasn't been through that, right? Like, yeah, they haven't responded in 9 weeks, but now this week they're going to respond to my great outreach. No, they're not. They're not going to respond ever again. So, you know.
I love the saying Schrödinger's cat of deals. Big fan. That's an amazing one. But Yoav, that these were some amazing tactical tips. The way you said it, I think everybody who is listening to this episode, listen to that again. What you just said about when somebody says, "Just show me the product," what you have to answer to this. That was perfect answer. And I also think the rest. I mean what you say about not being religious about sales methodology, if you have one of these people have this flexibility, be assertive, you know, be assertive. But, and that's one thing that I see, salespeople are not assertive enough sometimes, so that they ask the wrong way. You know, I tell my team, always book the next meeting in the call. You book the next meeting no matter what. And then I see salespeople who ask things like, "Hey, Yoav, do you mind if we book the next meeting to maybe see, or what do you think we should do? What do you say?" No, Patrick, we should not. Let's you know, I get back to you. That's fine. We don't book a next meeting." That's just the wrong way to ask. If you ask this way, you get 20% who say yes. If you say, "Hey, Yoav, can I make a suggestion about the next steps?" You say yes. And then I say, "Hey, Yoav, imagine, you know, can we book a next meeting already so that you have a deadline, basically, and I don't have to follow up with thousands of emails, you being annoyed about me always calling and emailing. You know, we already have the next step set. That's good for both of us. Is that okay with you?" Yes.
I agree. And I think that, you know, I learned this from a friend and a colleague, a guy called Chris Feroli, who ran, I think he's still there, Dynamic Yield. He told me that he used call recording software to check the last 5 minutes of every single sales rep's calls. And he says, "If I do not hear my team say, 'Can we put time on the calendar for Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it is, right? Time on the calendar and with an agenda. Tell them why. Why are we meeting? Like, nobody wants, let's just sync.'" Who wants to sync with you, dude? Like, people have other things to do. It's like, "Hey, can we set a time next week so that I can show you this, so that we can bring in that, so that I can do this?" Like, give them a reason, try and get it on the calendar. Some people will say no. Like, I think it's important to also, you know, these tips, these tactics, they're also not gonna work, you know? And that doesn't mean that they're not right. It just means that it sometimes doesn't work, right? And I think you need to adapt to the situation, but it's a really good practice to push for next steps. And I think that, you know, the concept of, you know, the mutual action plan or the upfront contract or whatever you want to call it, but this idea of saying, like, these are the next steps. Do we agree that these are the next steps? Do we agree that this is what we need to see? Do we agree? Let's get together on Tuesday to do this. Like, I think it's good practice. I think it's just good practice. And I think that this is not magic. None of these are silver bullets. You're not going to, you know, become a $1 billion seller overnight. But I think that it sets you up, and the repetition, at the end of the day, it's practice, right? Like everything good in life, it's practice. You need to do it again and again. You need to feel comfortable with it. And it pays off, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing end, Yoav. We 30 minutes are already up. It usually is faster than we think, and that was massively interesting, massive value, I think, for the listeners today. Thanks a lot for joining and sharing your wisdom here, Yoav. That was awesome.
Absolutely. Patrick, lovely to chat with you.
Thank you.